That's Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. You're listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Our webpage is located at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. There, just click on the live link to listen live, where you can hear podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, all that sort of stuff. At the top of the hour of the Dana Pretzer Show tonight, Clint Van Zandt, former FBI agent and television commentator, will be here. He's the guy behind the website livesecure.org. He's an author, terrorism expert, you name it, he's here. We'll be talking about the media and high-profile cases. And are we safer today than we were September 10th, 2001? And after that, tonight, Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch will be here. He's got a couple cases that he's working on. I want him to share with you the Erica Bradley case, who's missing in South Carolina. She's 17. And the Jason Rourke case, he's 26, and he's missing in Georgia. So that's Clint Van Zandt and Tim Miller tonight on the Dana Pretzer Show. Also, it looks like our old friend Saddam Hussein will meet his Waterloo and during the show, and I want to thank Saddam for doing that. We'll talk a little bit about Saddam after the next song. Welcome, Elvis. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name's Dana Pretzer. The Dana Pretzer Show starts in approximately 10 minutes. Tonight, Clint Van Zandt will be here and Tim Miller. It looks like our old friend Saddam Hussein, our favorite dictator, the butcher of Baghdad, will meet his Waterloo tonight during the show, and I want to thank Saddam for agreeing to do that. And I thought I'd share some fun Saddam facts with you. On April 27th, 1937, our old friend Saddam was born. He will die on, I guess it's the 30th there. Yeah, right. December 30th, 2006. In 1957, our friend Saddam joined the underground Ba'ath Socialist Party. I don't think they call themselves Ba'ath Party because they splash around in water with rubber duckies. Here's a fun fact. In 1958, Saddam was killed. No, he wasn't. He was arrested for killing his brother-in-law. Yeah, that's our friend Saddam. He was arrested for killing his brother-in-law, a communist. And he spent 6 months in prison, a whole 6 months for killing his brother-in-law. Let's see here. In 1959, he participated in a Ba'ath team that ambushes Iraqi strongman Abdul Karim Qasim in Baghdad, wounding him. Saddam was wounded in the leg, and he flees the country. And let's see here. In September 22nd, 1980, okay, he sent his army into Iran, setting off an 8-year war. It's always nice to start up a war when you're a dictator of a country. Let's see here. March 28th, 1988, he uses chemical weapons against Kurdish town of Halabja, killing an estimated 5,000 civilians. In 1990, on August 2nd, he invades Kuwait, leading to a war with the U.S. coalition that liberates Kuwait the following February. Let's see here. I think he killed his, didn't he kill one of his son-in-laws? Yeah, well, let's just say that everyone's favorite dictator, Saddam Hussein, will meet his Waterloo tonight. And I couldn't be prouder here on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network to have the Butcher of Baghdad swing from his neck until he's dead or something like that. And, of course, I'll monitor the wires and I'll let you know as soon as that happens. You are listening to the Scared... You know, I'm laughing because it's about time that something positive came out of Iraq, and it's certainly positive that Saddam Hussein will meet his Waterloo, because it's estimated that during his time of power, he killed over 300,000 of his people. You know, the mainstream left-wing wingnuts in the media always like to compare the Bush administration to Hitler. Well, I think there's only one guy that's really been close to Hitler and has accomplished what Hitler accomplished, and that's Saddam Hussein. And tonight, our friend Saddam will meet his Waterloo, and thank heaven for that. Mustang Sally. Guess you better slow that Mustang down. Mustang Sally, my baby. Guess you better slow that Mustang down. You've been running. All right.
will not tire, we will not falter, and we will not fail. Wanted, dead or alive. America wants him brought to justice. That's what we want, to get him running and to find him and to hunt him down. But we're going to smoke him out. Whether we bring our enemies to justice or bring justice to our enemies, justice will be done. Wanted, dead or alive. But make no mistake about it.
Well, they didn't get Osama, at least not yet, or, well, maybe they did, but I'll tell you what, one of those guys, Mr. Saddam Hussein, will meet his Waterloo tonight, and I couldn't be prouder to have that happen during the Dana Pretzer Show. You're listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Welcome. It's December 29th, 2006. Geez, where did the year go? You're listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name's Dana Pretzer. Coming up real quick, the Dana Pretzer Show. Tonight, Clint Van Zandt, former FBI agent, author, television analyst, you name it, will be here. He and I are going to talk about, well, we're going to talk about terrorism a little bit. We're going to talk about Saddam and the influence of media on high-profile cases. After that, from Texas Equisearch, Tim Miller will be here to talk about a couple of cases that he's working on. Welcome. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network.
Like everybody's getting on your case, from your teacher all the way down to your best girlfriend. Well, you know, I used to have them just about all the time, but I found a way to get out of it. Let me tell you about it.
All right, we're back. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name's Dana Pretzer, and just by coincidence, we call this the Dana Pretzer Show. It's always a pleasure to have my next guest on the air with me, Clint Van Zandt, former FBI agent, author, television analyst, security expert. One of his good websites is www.livesecure.org, and, well, it's always nice to have you. Clint, how are you?
Hey, Dana, good evening. Fine. Thanks for having me again.
You know, one of the things we were going to talk about tonight is, are we safer today than we were September 10th, 2001, and you and I were just talking off air about our old friend Saddam. We'll meet his Waterloo here in the next half an hour or so. And I guess that's as good a segue as any. Are we safer today than we were September 10th, 2001? And what's your thoughts about Saddam meeting his Waterloo?
Well, I guess two issues. Number one, I think, you know, this is a guy who's responsible for the death of tens of thousands. It's a guy who's used weapons of mass destruction against the Kurds and killed, you know, fellow countrymen. This guy is due date and hell has been sitting out there for a long time. So
yep.
It's time for him to pack his bags and move on to the next phase of his life. But, you know, when we talk about are we safer, you know, part of it from your and my perspective, you know, you as current, me as former law enforcement, is you look and you say the proof is in the pudding. You say, okay, you know, 2001, 2006, have we had any other major Al-Qaeda-sponsored terrorist acts in Canada, in the United States? You know, the basic answer is no. We know that there have been plots, terroristic plots in Canada, in the United States. We know that the Canadian authorities, that the U.S. authorities across the board have stopped many individuals and activities that we know about publicly. And as, you know, as President Bush said at the time of 2001, 9/11, he said, you know, there are going to be activities that we're never going to hear about. And, you know, some of them I've heard about that have never broken in the news, of things that the FBI and CIA and other national and international agencies, law enforcement and investigative intelligence across the world, have worked very diligently to deny terrorists the ability to carry out these acts. Now, we know in many countries this has happened. We know there's been bombings across the world in various countries, in Asia, in Europe. We know that the Brits have just done a great job in breaking up a number of rings over the years. And, you know, you get back to that, you know, that cliche you hear that in law enforcement you've got to be right at, 100% of the time. The terrorists have only got to be lucky 1% of the time. I think we're living with that statistic. I think that, as many people will tell you with a background in terrorism, that the question is not if we will get hit again, but simply when, what country and to what level will we get hit. But so far, I think that, you know, law enforcement and intelligence agencies have done a real good job. Now, part of that is, I think, because organizations like Al-Qaeda and the many, many dozens of splinter groups that come off of Al-Qaeda that self-initiate, many of those groups are still looking for the big hit. They still want to do something commensurate or along the level of 9/11. They're looking for weapons of mass destruction. They're looking for some very high-profile type of activity to show that they're capable of doing this. But, you know, Dana, all they got to do is model their activities after the Washington, D.C. snipers. You put out five or six sniper teams like those two nuts running around in a 15-year-old Chevy Caprice with a $400 rifle and a $25 box of bullets. We saw the terror that struck in this part of the United States. If you had half a dozen teams like that, what would that do across Canada, across the U.S.? I mean, we haven't seen that. We've been fortunate. And I'm just glad that these terrorist organizations don't do the things that we used to game out in the FBI and try to defend against by our planning. We planned many more horrific things than we've seen done. The one thing we did, I remember, 15 years ago was figure that we would someday see a commercial airliner used as a weapon of mass destruction. But I got to tell you, we never envisioned four, or as some people suggest, there may have even been plans for six. Box cutters were found stuffed in two other airplanes that never got off the ground. So the question is, what were those box cutters doing on those planes, and could those two planes have been used also? I just don't know those answers.
Well, I think you're right when it comes to the successes that law enforcement has had. A big part of these successes is the intelligence, and the intelligence comes from the people. And I think we have to give credit, Clint, to the people out there too, because they're passing on the information, they're passing on the concerns. The old days of not wanting to get involved, maybe out there a little bit now, but I'm not so sure anymore, and it's a big part that the people have helped with this cause. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, you think back. I remember, it must be 35 years ago now, a woman, I think her last name was Genovese, was brutally, brutally murdered in New York City. She was stabbed to death one night. She was beaten and stabbed to death, and she screamed and hollered and screamed and pleaded. And dozens of people walked by and heard that, and no one attempted to intervene. And when I heard about that, I thought, what is the matter with people? How can you let something like that? You know, it's like when I was a kid, I had this little statue of three monkeys, you know, hear no evil, speak no evil, and what was the third? See no evil.
That's
you know,
right.
So I thought, you know, since 9/11 especially, we have really been our brother's keeper. I think most people across the world realize that the public has to be, you know, the military would call it a force multiplier. You know, one man with a machine gun is worth five guys with a rifle. That the general public has to be a force multiplier. In the United States, there are only 750, upwards of 800,000 police officers all across the entire United States. There's only 12,000 FBI agents all across the world. But in the United States, you've got 300 million Americans that can be the eyes and ears of law enforcement. And that has to be done all across the country. And I think everyone as a citizen has to realize that there is a responsibility of citizenship in whatever country you live in. And part of that responsibility is standing up and saying, I may not be out fighting terrorists with guns and bullets, but I can use my eyes and ears. And if I see two guys manhandling propane tanks up to the third floor of a building where there's no reason for those tanks to be up there, I'm simply going to tell the police, you might take a look and try to figure out what those guys are doing. I don't have to intervene as a citizen, but I've got a responsibility as a citizen to tell the police and let them go out and let the, you know, the less than 1 million do the job in the United States of trying to protect 300 million.
And they're doing a hell of a job at that.
One
thing that we want to focus on a little bit tonight, Clint, is the media and their influence in high-profile cases. And I think what we were discussing previous kind of ties into this, too. Now let's take the Duke rape case. This thing has gone every which possible way that it can. I think the smartest thing that the DA, whether he's guilty of any misconduct or not, that will be seen. But the smartest thing he could do right now is proceed on with his investigation, but step away from it and turn it over to another DA, in my opinion. What went wrong here, Clint, with this case? Is this something that the media influenced negatively? Is this something where a DA talked too much and sewered his own case or what? And then we'll get into some other cases.
Yeah, and you know, an interesting analogy let me make for you is the Duke case where the prosecutor was talking all the time to literally everybody about any aspect of the case that he could talk about. And then if we look at like in Atlantic City, New Jersey, we've got a serial killer of prostitutes has already killed four prostitutes there, and that DA has such a cap on that case that not one piece of information gets out that office doesn't want to be released.
Right.
Now, you kind of look at that balance. You say, well, do you put the information out? Most of us know that in London, England last month, there was a serial killer operating. The British authorities put everything out they had on those murders, to include going on the Internet, sharing pictures, talking about the crime scenes. Well, that led to the identification of a suspect who was subsequently arrested for those crimes. So there, you know, we've got three different examples of, do we use the media to the full extent? Do we use it partially and perhaps use it the wrong way, as I believe the DA did in the Duke case?
Yes.
Or do we put a complete cone of silence over the case, like is done in Atlantic City, and saying we, the police, the authorities, will solve it, but that way you got to do it yourself and you've got no input from the public, but you don't spawn copycats either. So, you know, in law enforcement, you realize there's this fine line out there to sharing information. In the Duke case, if you know, you sit back and you look at that and say, anytime you have an allegation like that, anytime you have an allegation in this case of a rape or a gang rape in that type of environment, to me, that's always a two-track investigation. Track number one says you believe the victim exactly what she says and you investigate to support her story. Track number two says, I also have to consider that she's lying, and I also need to investigate that side of the case, too. Now, that's not saying because she's a dancer, she's a hooker, she's a woman, or anything else like that,
right,
that we don't believe her and we would believe someone else, but it's saying any type of an allegation like that, you have to have that two-track investigation. And as I watched that unfold, it really seemed to me that the DA had zeroed in on these soccer players, that he believed in his heart they were guilty. He believed what at least the one alleged victim had said. But, you know, to me, this whole thing, when the first photo spread was a picture of 50 guys on the lacrosse team,
yep,
and they told the victim, okay, here's your photo spread. Well, I mean, you know, a blind monkey could close their eyes and put their paws in three or five different places,
yeah,
and pick out five suspects and have the DA say, aha, there, we picked them out of the lacrosse team. why not mix them up? Why not have blacks and whites and browns and young and old? Why not have a photo spread? I mean, just give her the whole school yearbook if you're going to do something like that, as opposed to give her a confined group and say, aha, we know your suspects have to be here. When I saw that photo spread was conducted like that, I thought this case is going to go downhill fast.
Well, exactly, and it takes away from if a crime has happened. It certainly takes away from a competent investigation, a due process investigation, and now the whole investigation has spun to the credibility of the DA, and I don't know, again, I'm saying that he would be a smart man to step aside, keep the case open if the evidence is there, but have another DA take over it. But he seems like a stubborn man, and I have to wonder, Clint, and I'll ask you this, has the media coverage, because this guy watches TV,
sure,
this guy reads the papers, has the media coverage made him more stubborn, more convinced that I'm going to go ahead with this, come hell or high water. I don't care what the people are saying.
Well, obviously, you know, nobody knows Mike Nifon's mind but Mike himself. You know,
right.
Nobody else knows that. But, you know, if you also look, if we're talking about district attorneys and prosecutors, look in Boulder, Colorado. Look at that district attorney there who dug in her heels and who believed that John Mark Carr had something to do with the murder of JonBenet Ramsey. And made that the circus, media circus, just like the Duke LaCrosse case had become, where in both cases, if both prosecutors had quietly went out and done their investigation, perhaps elected not to go before the media other than to say the investigation continues, the media circus that was generated from both of those cases wouldn't have come about. No one's reputation would have been besmirched. We could have left John Mark Carr in Thailand, and these Duke lacrosse players, it looks like now, whose reputation has been perhaps soiled unjustly, would never have had to go through that, and they could have resolved that case. So, you know, I'm not for the total cone of silence. Again, my initial analogy on the Washington, D.C. sniper case that we talked about, that case was solved, and because I was up at MSNBC or CNN the night those two guys were arrested, and I knew at the time the information on the license plate that the two shooters were driving, the car they were driving, had been developed, and law enforcement was trying to stop at that time the media from releasing it. And I remember CNN, even though I worked for NBC, CNN grabbed that and said, heck with it, we're going to run with it. Then the other networks did too. Well, you know, part of that, as a former FBI agent, it made me a little bit angry, but the other part of me said, you know, that's the right thing to do, because we don't need 2,000 cops in the Washington, D.C. area looking for these snipers based upon a license plate on a car. We need 100,000. We need 500,000 civilians knowing what that plate is and being able to dial 911 on their cell phone. And must remember that when that information was released, a truck driver who was at a rest stop heard it over his radio, looked down in front of him, lo and behold, there was the car with the license plate. He called the police. The FBI SWAT team came and took the two bad guys down before they could shoot anyone else. So that balance always has to be considered. Can the public help a case, or can the media exposure itself drive the prosecutors and drive the investigators into taking actions that are totally inappropriate for the case? And I think everyone has to be weighed on its merit.
Well, Sir Robert Peel, in his Peel's Principles of Policing, said a long time ago, the people are the police and the police are the people. And if we can't work together, there's something seriously wrong. If you're just tuning in, Clint Van Zandt is here tonight on the Dana Pretzer Show. Clint, let's talk about the public's fascination, I guess, interest with high-profile cases. The Holloway case, for example.
Sure.
Here's a very sad case. You can spin this 50 different ways, from corruption to incompetent investigation to all of a sudden now there's civil suits going on. But the bottom line is that the family doesn't have any answers yet. They haven't been able to bring their daughter home. This is a big-time media event, although we see mainstream media not dealing with it so much anymore unless something comes forward. What went wrong or what went right, say, with the Holloway case and the media?
Well, I think for the case itself, It started out in the wrong place at the wrong time. I don't think I've been down to Aruba. I went down for NBC and MSNBC to do some investigative reporting at the time. I was down in Aruba and some of the islands as an FBI agent helping on investigations when I was a profiler. So I'm familiar with law enforcement in those areas. And sometimes they get crimes that are just jurisdictions, departments can get a crime that's just simply over their head.
Yep.
Either the investigation, even though it should be Investigations 101, can get away from them, but most agencies are not familiar with what happens when you have a tremendous media rush. The O.J. Simpson case, the JonBenet Ramsey case, and other, the Lacey Peterson case in the States, other high-profile kidnappings, homicides, that if you, as a law enforcement officer and agency, if you haven't seen the tsunami that the media can bring across your front yard and over the top of your police department, it's a lesson to behold and to understand that you've got to get a hold of the case and you've got to get some type of relationship with the media going before you simply lose control. In the case of Natalie Holloway, again, having been down there, and I spoke to one of the Calpol brothers myself, I know Beth, Natalie's mother, very well from numerous television shows and interviews that she and I have done together. And, you know, I saw a lot of people over that 1 year that story was very, very prominent in the media, really bashing, really taking shots at Beth Holloway Twitty. And, you know, knowing her personally, this was not anyone who was out for anything for herself other than one simple thing that she said over and over again. I just want to know what happened to my daughter.
Yep.
That's all she was asking. And, you know, I didn't see her as someone who was out sensationalizing, but I did see the media put their teeth into that. I mean, a couple of months ago, I was walking into MSNBC to do an interview, and Greta Van Susteren was walking in at the same time for her show. So we started talking, and I said, you know, Greta, are you still doing something on the Holloway case? And she said, you know, she said, we kind of, in the media, we painted ourselves in a corner on that. She said, we ran with that story so much. And the reality is, Greta didn't say it, but in her behalf, her ratings doubled at least because she was running that story. So Greta said, we've kind of painted ourselves in a corner that we've run with this story so much that the listening public expects us to continue. And if we don't, someone else will do it. You know, and that's the interesting thing now. If we have, like in the States, we have Fox, we have CNN, we have MSNBC, all in competition, all in an absolute, dog race, trying to get the maximum ratings they can. Well, does that mean you have to sensationalize these stories? Again, in the D.C. sniper case, I was on TV night and day talking about that and working very hard, just like you would have done, Dana, not to get carried away in speculation. I mean, I heard so many guys, some New York City cops say, well, it's going to be two skinny white kids. And I heard, probably to include myself, saying, well, statistically, it's a lone white male. But I said, in this case, I don't think so. I said, number one, any lone white male driving a white panel truck, of which there were 60,000 in the local area, has already been stopped and proned out on the highway by the state police, the city police, or the FBI. We know who's driving these vehicles. So I don't think it's a white van that's being used. And number two, I don't think it's a white guy, and I think it's two guys. Because, not because I'm a brain, not because I'm smart, you need one guy to drive and one guy to shoot if you're going to get away. It's just common sense. So in my sense, I said, I think it's probably two black guys, a younger and an older, one guy with military experience. They're driving a vehicle together, one's driving and one's shooting. Well, you know, that turned out to be, as the case was, and I remember Jerry Nachman, who was running MSNBC at the time, I called him up and I said, Jerry, I don't want to be on television anymore talking about this case. I said, I think it's wrong. I said, I think myself and every other talking head, I think we're feeding this case. I think there's a media feeding frenzy that's going on. I said, number one, this is more information than the public needs. Number two, I think the shooters are watching us every night, and I think we're feeding their desire to go out and do this. I said, I think we're wrong, I think I'm wrong, and I don't want to do it anymore. And Nachman just kind of waited a minute. He said, I tell you what, Clint, he said, you know, you're under contract with us, but you don't have to do that. He said, I respect that. He said, I think you're the voice of reason. And he said, you don't have to do that at all. He said, but I tell you what, he said, we will continue to run with the story. And he says, we will find other people to put on. And he said, if they speculate and run crazy with an idea of what this might be, he said, we've got no way to stop that. So he said, you and other people like you, if you want to come on, and if you want to take away the speculation and stay with investigation, we'll go with that. But he said, otherwise, we're going to run with that story. Well, you know, that hasn't changed to this day, Dana, that the media is still going to run with the story. And it just depends on the network, how sensationalistic they want to get, or do they want to stick with the facts that you and I have learned in law enforcement and investigations over the years. And the question is, does the public demand the Holloway story, the JonBenet Ramsey story? Is the public out there demanding the media to do it, or is the media simply spoon-feeding us something that's so sensational, it's like a soap opera that draws us back night after night to see what's new? I mean, look at the Holloway case. Yep. In over a year, nothing really changed. Three primary suspects, she got in the car, she drove away with them. It's very likely that somehow they knew something about how she expired that night.
Yep.
They were interviewed, no physical evidence. I mean, that's the story. And the media, television in America, ran with that for almost a year, retelling the same half a dozen sets of facts over and over and over again.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you said it best, Clint, common sense reporting, common sense investigation. Be amazing what that can do. Thank you for coming on, my friend. I wish you all the best in 2007. I'll stay in touch and have you on again sometime.
Thanks. God bless.
Bye-bye. Clint Van Zandt. And yeah, common sense reporting, common sense investigation. Maybe Natalie Holloway would be home. We'll be right back here on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
What do those words mean to you? To me, they say, thank you, America, for your strength, your courage, and for our freedom, which has been a beacon to the world for 200 years.
Of the United States of America.
Whose bright stars are 50 states, each bearing its own stamp of individuality. People, 200 million strong. People who have come to her from all corners of the earth.
And to the republic for which it stands.
A land of laws. Genius system of checks and balances that allows no man to become a tyrant and lets no group prevail if their power is not tempered with a real concern for the governed. A land where the right of dissent and of free speech is jealously guarded, where the ballot box is the sword and the people its wielder.
One nation under God.
A land where freedom of worship is a cornerstone of her being. A land graced with temples and churches, synagogues and altars that rise in profusion to embrace all the religions of the world.
Indivisible.
A land forged by the hot steel of raw courage, informed forever by the awful crucible of civil war.
With liberty.
Her man, in pursuit of an honest life, will not be denied his chance. Where her citizens move freely within her vast borders without hindrance or fear. A land brimming with opportunities, where freedom of choice is the guideline for all.
And justice.
The courts of our land are open to all. Its wheels of justice grind for all causes, all people. They look to every avenue for justice, every concern of the law, and they temper their reasoning with mercy for all.
Yeah, amen. You bet. December 29th, 2006. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. We'll be back in just a minute with Tim Miller from Texas EchoSearch.
Uno, dos, one, two, tres, cuatro.
Say they had enough of rock and roll music today. If you didn't come to boogie, you didn't come to ball. You got no business being here at all. It is gonna be one of those nights. It's just got to be one of those nights. Hey people, I'm gonna give you warning. We're all going to jail in the morning. Grab somebody and hold on tight. It's gonna be one of those nights. Well, we just flew in for one night stand. Everybody here's gonna have a good time. Well, it's gonna be one of those nights. It's just got to be one of those nights. Clap your hands and stomp your feet. Follow me if you lose a beat. Now you got the rhythm and it feels alright. It's gonna be one.
Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. It's always a pleasure to have this gentleman on my program, Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch. He's got a couple of cases that he's working on, the Erica Bradley case, 17 years old, missing in South Carolina, and Jason Rourke, 26, in Georgia. Tim, how are you this evening?
I'm all right. Thank you. Very, very tired. Been traveling a lot.
I'll bet. You're a busy guy. You need to get some rest, too, and stay healthy for us, because you're doing God's work out there, that's for sure. Before we get into these two particular cases, I was looking at your webpage here a little while ago, and I see something called EquiSafe. Can you engage my audience a little bit on what that's all about? It seems exciting.
Well, EquiSafe is some software we're probably going to be coming out with. It's going to allow the parents to really monitor what their children are doing, who Good. Their children are talking to on the Internet.
And, excellent.
It's something we've been working on. Our attorneys are looking at it real close right now. There's some things in the contract that we're getting changed and stuff, but we think it's going to be, there's nothing going to be foolproof at all.
Well,
but I think it's going to be another tool that is going to allow parents to really know what's going on, and we're pretty excited about it, and we felt as though it'd be available by now, but it looks like it's going to be another week or two before it's going to be available, and we're interested to see how it's going to work for these families.
Well, for sure, and it sounds like it'll be something very exciting and something that we can discuss on this program at another time. A couple of cases you're working on, Erica Bradley, 17 years old, missing in South Carolina. Tell us about that case.
Erica Bradley over there, this is a puzzling case. I start out with saying something that maybe I shouldn't say, but I'm sure I'm not going to get in trouble. There's certainly evidence present that suggests that little Erica is no longer alive.
Mm-hmm.
I actually talked with somebody while we was doing that search, and it appears as though there was only possibly a 35-minute window of opportunity for this person, the suspect, to do something to her. And that car is impounded. They won't let the car out of the sheriff's department, so that's staying there as evidence that they was probably involved in this. It's a very, very, very small community over there. Ellendale is a very small sheriff's department, and they literally just shut their town down and worked this case nonstop and for a couple weeks, actually, and just did not have the resources and manpower to do really a proper search. We've got a pretty good-sized search going on. I anticipated we'd have found her by now, but I've got people still over there. In fact, I was over there, and I got back over here to Atlanta on this Jason Rourke case yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a wonderful family. She has a small baby, and was still in school, had a full-time job also, and something just went terribly wrong. The evidence has actually been given to the DA, and, they've not done an indictment yet. That could possibly happen. I don't know. It's not looking so promising right now. But it's one of the cases where we really need bodies. The family needs it. The law enforcement needs it. And there's a lot of wooded areas, a lot of dirt road areas that we're just traveling, and again, we've had some other search teams come down there and assist us in this, and it's real needed. I think we're changing some things in the search industry where a lot of search teams are just real territorial, and we're reaching out to these other search teams, having them come in and work with us, and we're working great with them, and it's, again, bringing more resources for these families and for law enforcement, and I think we're proving that we all can work together for the same reason. Everybody leave their attitudes and egos at home, and we can accomplish it.
Absolutely. That's three quarters.
So, we're making some big moves in that, and we're encouraging all these teams to
That's three quarters of the battle, that's for sure.
Out of it, and if you're not in it for the right reason, then don't get in it, or get out of it if you're not in it for the right reason.
Right, yeah, exactly, because it's all about...
Erica, we got very, very close with that family, and we certainly let them know that it may not feel like it right now, but God still is around, and apparently she's going to be found in God's time, but I'm very optimistic she's going to be found.
Well, it's all about the families, that's for sure, and getting them the answers they deserve. Tell us about Jason Rourke in Georgia.
Oh, Jason Rourke. Here's another family that's just crushed. Jason Rourke reminds me of the case we did earlier this year. The Raul Mendoza case in Houston. Raul went to serve two tours in Iraq, came home without a scratch, and got carjacked. We found his body on the fourth day of searches, shot in the head, robbed. And Jason served two tours in Iraq in special ops. And again, another one of our soldiers came back without a scratch. He was working as assistant manager for a Texas Roadhouse restaurant, really doing well. And something happened.
Mm-hmm.
We actually got the video from a motel that he was staying at, and we seen what time he checked in, what time he left. He actually left at 11:03 in the morning on November 9th. And so they looked at his car in NCIC in his name, and it was December 13th, and his vehicle was actually found on a rest area on Interstate 20, probably 40 miles east of Atlanta. And there was a witness there that actually worked in that rest area and said that the car had been there about a month, and we just tried to figure out why the Georgia Highway Patrol, or any highway patrol, not to pick on Georgia by no means,
right,
to make the vehicle that's just abandoned in a rest area.
Exactly.
Why they don't at least just run the license plate number. So
yep.
The vehicle was found. We was real involved in the case at the very beginning and knew we couldn't do anything until the vehicle was found. We was out here for about a week and searched every way possible to search the vehicle. After it was found, of course, we were doing things in South Carolina, and now I'm back over here in Atlanta. We're going to be putting another search together for tomorrow and Sunday, weather permitting. And I just don't think they left it any longer either. And I talked to his mother tonight for a long time. I talked to her probably every other day, and I talked to her tonight, and finally admitted to me that last night she just had her and her husband both just had major meltdown. They would just find our baby if they're their only child.
Right.
They know he's dead. They can deal with that. But if another family can't deal with the fact, they're not going to be able to say goodbye to them and have some type of closure.
Yep.
You know, these cases are so very, very sad for the families, and sad for us. We're so involved in them that we actually become almost part of the family, and it feels like, and to walk away, I mean, to get them home safe, I mean, that's just the ultimate.
Yep.
It doesn't get any better than that. And we did that once this week on a 13-year-old girl in Houston. That was just an amazing story in its own. But, you know, the second best thing we can do when they're out there missing, if we can at least find them, and law enforcement has a crime scene, they can determine cause of death, hopefully, if it's not been too long. A family can have that closure, but you know, when we have to walk away from that family and say, "No, we've done everything that we can possibly do at the time," and leave them, you know, makes us feel like we've let that family down, let the community down, and we lose a lot of sleep. Again, our members are famous, and you can't believe how many miles we've traveled over the last 6 months with our members. And in, we was here in Atlanta, and then the week after that, we was in Louisiana. The week after that, we was in Memphis, Tennessee. Now this week, we're in South Carolina and Atlanta again. And some of my members are just so very, very dedicated. And they're volunteers. They're not making a dime.
Yeah.
And, you know, they all they have is just huge hearts and determination. And maybe I'm the director, but you know what? When these people pull out, we've not brought some type of resolution. I know it's a very, very sad day for them, so we'll never give up. If there's any new information, any new leads, and we have to come back and get back involved in the search, we'll do it. And one of them we did with Larry Guillory in Houston that after 20 months, we found them. So we let the families know they're not alone, even though it feels like it. And I just wish that we could, I just wish we could do more. But once in a while, you know, I have to sit back and realize that maybe we are doing some of God's work, and it happens at God's times, and that's Tim Miller. So, and then if there's the next case just right around the corner. If, you know, there's not been any downtime for us.
Right.
We're not complaining by no means, but, you know, there's a certain amount of burnout that happens.
Well, sure there is, because you're only human.
Thank God I'm finally going to have that surgery on my neck next week, and I'll be able to have some downtime.
All right. Well, it's too bad that you have to have surgery to get downtime. Jeez.
It's been a long time coming. I put it off, and now they're just going to literally be fusing my entire neck together and
Fuck.
I'll be down for a while, but, you know, the office is going to go on. The searches will go on. Maybe not to the extent that they have been. And I'm excited, too. We got somebody new in the office. Barbara's not with us any longer. Cheryl Lawless is working the office full-time right now. She's very, very, very pleasant. She has real tears. She's cried several times with the families during these first couple weeks, and they were real. She was working for us part time before, and again, I'm very, very blessed to have her. And she follows up on every phone call and every email, and you know, some things were happening in the office where it was time to make a change. And, you know, I'm not going to slander Barbara. Maybe there was some burnout going on with her, and we certainly wish her well in whatever she's going to do in the future. But it was just time that we had to make a change.
Yeah.
And change isn't always easy, but
no.
There's times that it has to happen. And so I think a lot of our members and volunteers are kind of regenerated and excited, and they got a friendly voice to talk to in the office. So, you know, it puts some new life in it. Anyhow, we're real excited about Cheryl coming on board.
That's fantastic. Listen, Tim, I won't keep you any longer. Godspeed. Have a great new year. I'll stay in touch, and good luck with your surgery. And you guys are doing God's work, and we're blessed to have you for sure.
So let's all keep these families of these missing in our prayers, and, you know, that's the most important thing. You know, God does still work, and it's been proven before, and I might just ask the people to go to our website, look at the missing ones we have, and please just keep them and the families in your prayers.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tim.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. I'm Dana Pretzer. I'll be right back.
People passing by, they were stopping to see.
And we're back. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name's Dana Pretzer. Special thanks to Clint Van Zandt and Tim Miller for dropping around. And special thanks to Saddam Hussein, who, if all accounts are correct, has about 10 minutes before he goes swinging. Remember that song, Just a Swingin'? Our old friend, the Butcher of Baghdad, will meet his Waterloo sometime tonight, possibly in the next 10 minutes. And we here at the Scared Monkeys Radio Network would like to thank him for deciding to take his plunge into hell during the Dana Pretzer program. If you would like to call in, toll free 1-877-842-7884, 1-877-842-7884. That's toll free, and we can talk about anything you like. Always nice to have Tim Miller and Clint Van Zandt on with us, and I wish them both a happy new year and good health to Tim Miller. Good grief. I wonder if the guy gets any sleep. You know, he's out there doing great work, that's for sure. Here's some fun Saddam Hussein facts. Our old friend Saddam was born April 28th, 1937, and will die on December 30th. I guess it's December 30th in Baghdad. 2006. He joined the underground Ba'ath Socialist Party in 1957. Let's see here. In 1958, here's a fun fact, something that you want to put in a family almanac if you're one of the Hussein family. Saddam killed his brother-in-law, who was a communist. I don't know if he killed him because he was a communist. And he spent 6 months in prison for doing that. 6 months for killing your brother-in-law. In 1959, he participated in a Ba'ath team. I don't know, it's a bunch of dictators in a bathtub with rubber ducks or what it is. And that ambushed Iraqi strongman Abdul Karim Qasim in Baghdad, wounding him. Saddam was wounded in the leg and fled the country. Obviously, if he was wounded in the leg, he wouldn't be able to run, so they must have maybe flew out on his magic carpet or something. In 68, he takes charge of internal security after Ba'ath seizes power and authority, and he passes to council headed by it's hard to say these names. Ahem Hassan al-Bakr, Saddam's cousin. You know, the old Saddam, there must be a lot of swingers. Not just will Saddam be swinging in Baghdad tonight. There must be a lot of swingers there, because it seems like Saddam's related to everybody there. A lot of inner family stuff going on. In 79, he took over as the president of Iraq from al-Bakr, and he launches a purge of the Ba'ath Party. I'm sure that was fun. In September 22nd, my birthday, he sent an army into Iran, setting off a 8-year war. In 1982, he survives an assassination attempt, and then he, what did he do? Saddam's security forces then attacked the town. On March 22nd, 1988, he used chemical weapons against a Kurdish town, killing an estimated 5,000 civilians, and on it goes, and where it stops, nobody knows, but again, our old friend Saddam Hussein will meet his Waterloo, by all accounts, all reports in the media, and if it happens to happen during the program here, I'll certainly let you know. Let's see here. I'm not sure. I'm reading an email that doesn't make much sense to me right now, but again, I don't have my glasses on. You can call in toll-free, 1-877-842-7884, 1-877-842-7884. Okay, all right. I see what this is happening here. And I want you to remember that the Scared Monkeys radio page, I always get these emails because it's still a little bit confusing, even since the switch over, but we are at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. There you can listen to the show live, and here's where the confusion happens. There's a little box, you just click it, and you can listen to the stream when we're going. It's not on 24 hours a day, only when we do the live programming. All right, and we let you know at scaredmonkeys.com and other places that we're doing live programming. Otherwise, the daily commentaries and the past shows are there, and you can just click on them and listen or download them to your iPod or whatever, and we certainly appreciate you doing that. Only one rule is if you're not listening live, I do ask that you not call the number because I won't answer. That's just one of those things. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break and come back and see if any of you want to call in. Again, I wish you all a very happy New Year, safe New Year. And remember, if you drink, I don't care how much you drink, don't drive. We'll be right back.
I know, I just second, man. I'm about to lose my... Anyway, my scarf's too short, my belt's falling off. Losing my mind, you know. If I could be you, if you could be me, for just 1 hour, if we could find a way to get inside each other's mind, if you could see you through my eyes instead of your ego, I believe it'd be a surprise to see that you've been blind. Walk a mile in my shoes. Did you walk a mile in my shoes? Yeah, before you abuse, criticize, and accuse. Did you walk a mile in my shoes? Now, if we spend the day throwing stones at one another.
Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name's Dana Pretzer, and we call this the Dana Pretzer Show. I'm not sure why. And on the line, we have the head monkey himself. Haven't heard from him for a while. Red, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Dana. How are you?
Good. Your thoughts on the Butcher of Baghdad meeting his Waterloo? And again, I want to thank him for deciding to do that during a Dana Pretzer Show. And too bad we couldn't arrange the rights to have it done live here on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network.
I was trying to see if I could get a last-second interview with him.
Yeah.
To see what was going through his mind before they slide the noose around his neck. But the comical thing was, first they announced that it was going to be done Sunday, then they said Saturday. Hey,
yeah,
you know, why wait?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I'm sure he deserves it.
Yeah, might as well get rid of him. How you been? How was your Christmas? What's going on?
Oh, it's been, you know, it's been a crazy time.
Yes.
It's, you know, with the holiday season, New Year's, I certainly wanted to call in and wish you certainly a happy New Year.
Thank
it's
you.
I'm sure it's a crazy time for you as a police officer.
Yep.
As people can do some foolish things this time of year.
It's weird, but anyone that's in public service, policing, EMS, fire, hospitals, whatever, from about the 15th to the 30th of November till about the 15th to the 30th of January, you might as well have a full frickin' moon all the time. And, you know, I tell you, and it takes away from, you know, you deck the halls and God rest you, dear merry gentlemen, and stuff like that. I really don't want to see another drunken Christmas party or anything for a long time. And my kids call me Scrooge, but I guess I've been a cop too long. But that's just the way it goes. Listen, your thoughts on Clint and Tim Miller tonight. I wanted to talk to Clint about the media, and you got to admit, this has been a hell of a year, 2006, for the media and high profile cases, whether it's Ramsey, Holloway, John Mark, you name it. It just seems to go on and on and on. Have they done a good job?
I mean, Dana, I think they've had their highlights, and they've certainly had their lowlights.
Yeah.
What's interesting is I've heard and watched many of the shows as they normally do around this time of season, as they talk about all the things that have transpired in the past year. And some of them have even made fun of their own coverage,
yeah.
which is rather comical, because, you know, I've heard more often than not the whole plane flight back, you know, by John Mark Carr,
yeah.
and the media being critical, but yet they're being critical of what they themselves put on the air,
yep.
which is even more bizarre than even, I guess, the original showing of watching a man eat shrimp and champagne on a plane.
Yeah.
And they spent, you know, obviously thousands of dollars for, I think Clint had said it on a past show, you know, would there have been anyone on the plane if it weren't for the media?
Yeah, exactly.
On that plane flight back from Thailand, yep. with John Mark Carr. And I think, and I hope for 2007 that many of these producers, some of which I know personally, get a clue,
yep.
as to what the American public really wants to hear and watch, because there are so many stories, and I know we're going to be doing a lot of things that is much different in 2007 to give light and give voice to many stories,
right.
that just are not heard on the mainstream media, and hopefully by giving them a voice, they in turn will be given given a fair shot by the mainstream media themselves.
Yep, absolutely, and that's what this is all about. If I was to rate the media, the cable news shows, I'd give them a C for their coverage. Again, Clint is a friend, and he's a great guest, but I think he nails it a lot of the time. When he talked tonight about having a conversation with Greta Van Susteren, and when he said that, she said that the media paints themselves into a corner, I think that's very accurate. And then they try to dig themselves out of the corner too, and that confuses the public, and they're not sure what to think. If it bleeds, it leads is one thing, but responsible reporting, just like a responsible investigation, you'd be amazed what kind of results you'll get.
No, I think you're dead on, Dana. I think the media goes into a story with an obvious slant, a bias, and an agenda, and it becomes more and more apparent depending on the story, whether it's whether we're talking about the Duke you know, rape case, whether we're talking about Natalie Holloway with how Greta has been covering that recently, whether it's any of them, they cannot just go in with an open mind. They have to slant it a certain way, and it becomes fairly obvious that that's what they're doing.
Yep.
And then when suddenly it doesn't turn out the way that they picked the side, they have egg on their face.
Yep.
And it's crazy in the sense that you would alienate half your audience by reporting in this manner. And like I said, it only goes on so many times. I mean, you've done many an interview this past year with the Melinda Duckett, Trenton Duckett case, and, you know, there's a certain slant there. You either are on one side or the other, but the reality is you really should be on the side of the missing child.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Listen, before I let you go, I want to thank you, the rest of the Monkees, Tom, everyone that's been there for 2006, and I think that we'll have a great 2007. We're doing something here, and you guys are doing something, the Scared Monkees, that nobody else is doing right now, and we're going to make a difference. We are making a difference, and I'm really looking forward to 2007 and working more with you, sir.
Thank you very much, Dana. It's been great having you as an addition onto the site. Tom has done yeoman's work as well. Cliff Fenn has just been, I don't even know where we would be without her.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, and like I said, it's all about, you know, trying to truly make a difference and trying to spotlight what really is important. And there are so many things that we will obviously try to do better in 2007. And, you know, there's some things behind the scenes even today. We've been talking with some people about doing some stuff a little bit different. And hopefully, you know, the new year, it will only get better. And I truly appreciate you you coming on and being the speak no evil monkey.
I love when Clint comes on. He always has a monkey comparison, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. He is truly one of a kind.
He's a class act for sure. Red, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling in.
Thank you, Danny. You have a great and happy new year.
Okay, talk to you soon, bud. Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye. That's Red. He's the head monkey. Thanks to Clint Van Zandt, Tim Miller, and Red from Scared Monkeys. My name's Dana Pretzer. Have a very safe and happy new year, and I'll see you very soon. Make sure and check out our webpage at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. Good night, everybody.